I'll go seven. Okay, question up here.
If it was actually an astronaut, what would the specification look like? Would it be copying it? Or destroying it?
It's destroying it and copying it. So the principle is saying whether it's an astronaut, whether it's an atom, whether it's a grain of sand, or whether it's a photon, you actually have to destroy the object you're trying to teleport originally.
And how does it appear if you've destroyed it?
Well, actually, what this is like, I guess there are two senses of teleportation. You can imagine in some science fiction scenario teleportation where you actually somehow, it really is Captain Kirk that teleported. You really do somehow teleport him and all the atoms that make him up. Or there's another sense where you make a perfect copy of him. So you're not actually teleporting the atoms making them up or the photons, but you actually get a perfect copy. And you actually have to have some other photons there at the other end. You have to have all the raw materials at the other end. So yeah, I didn't mention that. But if you want to reconstruct an astronaut at the other end, you actually need to have a whole bunch of atoms lying around. So carbon atoms, water molecules.
So you have to really kill two people, the first astronaut and the second astronaut, the basic.
No, you go it. There are other ways. You could just get water and some carbon atoms lying around and everything that makes up. So we don't have to. Yes, sorry.
But then if you're making a copy of the person, then the guy actually dies in another replica of him. Okay, but the astronaut did not come back to life, okay? He's dead. He's not in the life as
well.
Basically, you kill himself for that.
Well, I should say, I mean, this is just a theoretical example. We're just doing it with photons and atoms now. And that actually gets on to do a deep philosophical point. Is it the particular atoms that make you up, that make you, or is it just the pattern or arrangement of the atoms? Because the atoms that make you up today are not the atoms that made you up when you were 10 years old. Constantly we're shedding atoms and they're going out at the edge of our body and, you know, in our skin, and there are new atoms that are making us up. And so we have atoms making us up from different atoms, a different stage of time as we eat things and process things. And so maybe, this is a philosophical thing, and it's an open question. Is it, you know, if I were to sort of destroy you but make a perfect copy of you, is that you or is that someone else? And, you know, what makes up you? And then, it's a deep question. But certainly what we do, if we did it with the astronaut, if we got this copy at the other end, and I did not tell you that it was a perfect clone, there were different atoms making up, she would have exactly the same personality, she would look the same, she would talk the same, and there'd be no way, no experiment you could do, just looking at her, that could tell that we've made a perfect clone. So in a sense, for all practical purposes, you could say, well, you know, that is the astronaut. But there is this deep philosophical
issue. They would even have the same memories.
Exactly. Yeah.
They would, as from their point of view, from the one that was his favorite point of view, they lived through the same.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yes?
Wouldn't you have, am I correct in saying that you're basically converted into like a data stream and then sent somewhere else and reassembled according to that data?
So kind of in this example, it's a little bit different in one teleportation, but basically that's roughly, yep.
Okay. Well, I mean, wouldn't that be just information?
Absolutely. So if you think, absolutely. But this is why in some sense, And actually, quantum teleportation is quite a clever trick of how it uses it, and actually uses entanglement and exploits it as a way of doing it. So for a while, people actually didn't think you could do teleportation for various reasons, but one of them was it would involve just sending a lot of information from one place to another. But definitely one thing why we know we're ear close for teleporting people is there's just, you know, there's just a lot of information, you know. If we want to get an exact copy of you down to the molecular level, exactly, you know, down to, you know, even the way you part your hair at an atomic level, that's a lot of information. Yeah. So, okay. I'll just like sort of go on a bit. I'm happy to take some more questions in a minute. So okay. So this is the essence of teleportation in this case is constructing a perfect copy of an object at a distance location without actually sending the object itself. So we're not actually sending the object, but a data stream at someone's Z or whatever. So one problem is Heisenberg's uncertainty principle prevents us from knowing everything about an object. We want to know everything about it. We want to know exactly the positions and the velocities of every single atom making you up. But if we want to know them, we have to measure them. But if we measure, say, all the positions of all the atoms making up, then we mess up, we disturb the systems, or disturb all the atoms in your body as we saw yesterday. And so we know nothing about their velocities, their speeds, which way they're traveling, and how fast they're traveling. And so for a long time, people thought that you just could not do teleportation in quantum mechanics, because the Heisenberg's uncertainty principle prevented you from knowing everything about an object. And so what happened, the big discovery, and I think it was 1993, is that we found out there's a very clever way of getting around this. And the way it actually involves using entanglement, the sort of weird quantum resource we talked about yesterday, and you've probably heard about in the afternoon at IQC. And so I guess I should mention the key point. This is, we don't actually teleport the object itself. So if this happened in Star Trek, we wouldn't actually be teleporting Captain Kirk, but we'd actually get we'd kill him. but we'd get a perfect copy at the end. So what I should say is, you'll know that real life is not exactly perfect and ideal as it is in theory. So when I said they teleported a photon, they teleported an atom, what they do is, the copy is only a rough copy, so it's not a perfect copy. And in the case of the atoms in the photon in Vienna, I think the copies were around about, I forget what they were, but certainly for going back to this experiment here, the copies were around about, in a sense, they were sort of 60% good copies, or they were only really sort of 60%. If you sort of compare the copy to the original, the copies were only sort of 60% of the original one, or only 60% quality. So if they were like photocopies, they'd be sort of a bit fuzzed. And so if we kind of extrapolate this to Captain Kirk, and we just teleported Kirk, but it was only sort of a 60% good copy, then he kind of has nose and one side, and stuff like that. So, does anyone still want to volunteer for food first? Okay, and they're actually getting better, and I think it was about 75%. They copied with sort of a 75% fidelity, they call it, or faithfulness in this experiment. And we're looking at getting better and better, more accurate copies. So this is the idea. And so we teleport. So really, what we're doing is we're teleporting the properties of a photon, or the pattern, or the arrangement that make it up, or the atom, or whatever. And so we get a perfect copy of it, ideally. So quantum teleportation is really easy, and then we'll actually go to math. So please don't try this at home. Yes. So to transmit something from A to B, we need a means or a route to transmit it by. If you want to send an email to someone, a friend, your family back home or a friend back home, you know, you need a fiber optical cable somewhere running between here and your home or whatever. So you need some way of getting the information there. So the same thing happens in teleportation. So what it does, it uses two means or two routes, or it actually uses the term channel. So typically that's the technical term, two channels for getting information. One is, actually this doesn't sound very sort of sexy and cool and high tech, but it's kind of just a phone line or a wire connection. So it could be just a normal phone line going from the teleportation sort of starting point to the teleportation destination. So that's the first thing that we actually need. And the second thing we actually need, this one's a bit more tricky, is to teleport, say, the properties, a laser beam. So we're looking at teleporting a laser beam. What we actually need, the first channel, and the second one is two laser beams. So two laser beams, and they actually have to share entanglement. So we have to have two laser beams, and they had to be sort of connected at some point in the past, and then they interacted just the right way in a very, very sort of pure way, so that they basically became entwined or entangled with each other. So even though one might go off to one side of the lab and beam B might go off to the other side, they still are in some sense connected to each other. They still have these strange correlations. Whereas Einstein talked about it, spooky action at distance. He thought a lot about entanglement, and certainly it puzzled him a lot. So we have this kind of this dotted line here representing, in some sense, the atoms are still, or the laser beams are still connected to each other. And so these are the blueprints, these are the raw material we need, and if you've got this, you can do quantum teleportation. And so I guess I talked about a bit this a bit yesterday, but we're two quantum particles or beams and they're entangled with each other, then they can be instantaneously linked to each other, no matter how far apart they are. And in some sense, they act as a single object. And so one very sort of hand-wavy way of knowing, talking about entanglement is, entanglement means the left hand knows what the right hand is doing, even if when their hands are on opposite ends of the universe. So this might all seem kind of strange. And we have three dice that were entangled with each other, as I mentioned before yesterday, and we actually rolled them, even though we won't roll them at the same time in different rooms, so they would actually always end up rolling, just getting the same value. And
if you peel one copy, also the other one must die.
Sorry?
If you peel one copy of teleportation, also the other one must die, if they are entangled.
No, I'm not sure what you mean. Maybe if we go through and we'll see how we go.
I think he thinks that originally the teleported object is entangled with its original.
Right, well, yeah, that's, yeah, not quite. Yeah, maybe we'll go through it and look at that.
If you have two entangled photons and one of them gets absorbed into something, what happens to the other?
It just, nothing. It just stays doing what it was doing.
It's de-entangled.
Yeah, it's de-entangled and disentangled, but yeah, that's a good point. And so again, it's Einstein's take on entanglement. And so the first step is to quantum teleportation. It's actually, first of all, if we want to teleport, we've got something to teleport. And so what they did in the US, Caltech, and also the Australian National University, was they teleported a laser beam. So again, just like the light coming out of this laser pointer here, or supermarket laser beam in mind the supermarkets. Mm-hmm. And they actually teleported this laser beam. So the idea is to teleport or get a perfect copy of it way over here at beam B. And so the first thing is you've actually got to combine beams A with what you want to teleport. So this is what you do. So you kind of combine these two beams, and just to go into a bit more detail, typically what they do is have the beam coming up here, and the beam coming up here. And did you actually see any beam splitters or half silver mirrors people talk about sometimes? Yes, you did?
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. And so they're kind of like mirrors. And so what happens is if you shine a torch here into one of these half silver mirrors, no matter what angle, then what you find is half of the light, 50%, will get transmitted. And 50% will get reflected, so you get half the intensity at each of the two sides. And so this is exactly what they do in the experiment. And so this means that half of this light goes through here, half of this gets reflected, and the same thing for the other one. And then they have detectors here and detectors here. And so what you end up having is basically light from two different sources, from the two different beams coming into both detectors, into this one, we'll call it D1 and D2. And so essentially what these do is these actually, again, remember we can think of light as electric fields, light as being made up of sort of wiggling electric and magnetic fields. And so what these two detectors do is actually measure the amplitudes or the height. If we have a field or a wave, we can look at measuring the height or the amplitude of that wave. And so what these detectors do is actually measure the height or the amplitude of a component, one particular component, or I guess directional component of the electric fields that we have here. So this is what they do, and then so they get their results here. So, and then they actually combine the two sort of results here. And they get some number as a result, basically that reflects, I guess, the amplitudes of various components of the electric field we have here and the electric field we have here. And they combine the two results, and what they get is a number. That's the number that they get out. And so this process here just leads to some kind of number. And then the next step So, I guess what happens is, first of all, if we want to get the state, or we want to actually teleport all the information or somehow zap or beam it across in teleportation over to this site, we actually need, as I said before, some kind of channel or route. And so in a very natural way, and certainly the people that wrote the paper seemed, or at least applied that thing in this way, is that what happens is when you actually make the measurement here, because these beings are entangled with each other, so in some sense they're acting as if they're a single object, then that seems to sort of non-locally or instantaneously zap across some information about this being here over to being B, because of due to this entanglement. So you're sort of interacting these two together, so this kind of beam that you want to teleport across can actually sort of, I guess, use or utilize the information you have in the entanglement between these two to actually kind of zap some information across there. So it turns out that's actually not enough, that's sort of part of the story, that if you just have this state here, then that's actually, or this information, that's actually not enough, and the person at DMB, that they can't. They actually, in the end, can't do anything to reconstruct the teleportation beam. So what?
Faster than light, the information goes faster than light.
Yeah, it seems to, but the thing is, you can't actually use that to send a signal, because what it seems to do is faster than light, but you can't control it, so you can't actually send a signal. So there's no problem, at least directly, with sort of causation. So to be able to send a signal faster than light, so what Einstein seems to say is you can't send a signal faster than light, and so to send a signal, you have to be able to send something faster than light to send it in a controllable way. So if I want to send you a 0 or 1, I can send you that faster than light. So I could send you something faster than light, but if I tried to send you a 1 and it came out half the time it was a 1 or a 0, then I would be sending you something faster than light, but I couldn't use it to communicate with you because you know, you would just end up with randomly 0 or 1, and you wouldn't know what I sent. So in a sense, what's happening here is kind of like that. So it's a bit weird, but certainly what seems to be happening is something faster than light. Certainly, I mean, that's the way a lot of physicists think about it. Not everyone thinks about it that way, but certainly there's, at least in my mind, there's good reason for believing that. And there's a lot of experiments that back this up. So again, they get kind of the information here, the results of measuring various components of electric fields from these two measurements that we made here from the two detectors. And then what happens is you actually just need to take this result and you need to get it across to the other person's teleportation destination. And you can do that any way you want it. You can send them an email, you could shout across the lab, you could, you know, call them up using a cell phone, you could put it in the mail and send it to via a letter. And so it doesn't really matter how you do it, it just, there's got to be some conventional way for you to get this information from one side of the lab to the other, or in the case of the experiment across the Danube River, from one side to the other. And I think they actually just used some kind, maybe, I'm not sure what they used, but probably they just used some kind of fiber optical cable to send the information across. So that's why, I guess I said before, we just need to have some kind of conventional means of communication. It doesn't really matter what it is, but necessarily, there's no way of conventionally sending information faster than light. So the speed of light is actually the limit for quantum teleportation. And so I guess this is one kind of key point. I guess a lot of people think about teleportation in science fiction scenarios, it happens, bam, it's intense. But that's actually not what happens. There's some small necessary delay in quantum teleportation. So we send across the information there, the person gets it, and then as a result, what the person at beam B does, the third step for quantum teleportation is they just need to make a small adjustment to their beam of light. So they need to adjust, in a sense, the amplitude of the electric field of that, the amplitude of the beam, the laser beam they have, based on what information they have. So they just make this small adjustment that could involve applying some energy to it, and then it kind of seems to be by magic. But what happens is, lo and behold, given that the information passes from this channel, this is just enough. So once the adjustment is made, the actual beam you end up with here at the final teleportation destination is an exact copy of the original state of this teleportation beam here. So this one has been destroyed because we had to absorb it and absorb all the light from it, basically to make this measurement. So this measurement here is, in a sense, it's a destructive measurement. So I guess going back to this step, what we have to actually do to make these measurements, we have to absorb the light, so we have to destroy these two beings. So this is just really showing the example. We have to destroy what we're going to teleport, and then, but at the end, we kind of get an exact copy of that. So we haven't actually transferred the photons making up this thing over to here, but what we have done is we have an exact copy. And if you know someone that made this copy and knows exactly how it was, and you substitute in this copy or this laser beam for that one, then there's no way they'll be able to tell the difference. Yes?
So, you teleported a person, obviously information about
them. Yeah.
Like, the information you got from them, it would have to be in an instant, wouldn't it? Like, you have to sort of decompose a person, study like, in a short frame of time.
You mean you have to make the measurements really quickly?
Yeah.
Oops.
Otherwise they'll change when they're dead.
Oh.
What's up?
You mean you have to make these very, very, you have to do a fan instant measure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, because if you did it over time, that's...
Well, if you die, you know what happens.
That's
what you're saying, right? Decompose. Like, you have to do it.
Physics?
Right, yeah. Yeah. That's what you were saying?
Just a little bit more.
You're not going to be able to get all the information.
Because if you didn't do it instantly, you would keep changing. And And if you did it instantly, when you came to the other end, you'd be dead. Because in an instant, nothing's really happening. Is that right?
Wow.
No, I definitely, you'd have to do it very quickly on a much shorter time scale than any changes happen in our body. So otherwise you get kind of a, almost like a collage of part of a state. If you took sort of a hybrid, like the sort of copy of our fingers it was at one particular point, and then the copy of the top half of our body a second later. So, you have to probably do it on a fairly quick time scale to get like an instantaneous snapshot. But you're saying if you did it instantaneously, then, well, because nothing happens at an instant, you mean?
Essentially, like, you're frozen and you come out the other end. What's to say that you just don't, like, you remain frozen because nothing's happening?
Well, your heart will start beating. Exactly for this. Well, exactly for the same reason. I mean, we could every single instant you're going through an instant at a time, and your heart still keeps beating, and that's because it's just at various points there's, I guess, various forces acting on it to muscles to compress it or to expand it at various points. And so, if you teleport someone, they'd be their muscles would be crying at that. Basically, you teleport their muscles in a state such as they're crying to start beating. So, this would happen. Okay, we had. Yep.
When the person was teleported, feel the teleportation?
Would the person that was teleported feel the teleportation?
I think it
would be yes. That's an interesting question. That's a good question. Certainly, the measurement would have to. I mean, this is way. So I should say, we're just teleporting a single photon, just a single atom. So this is like thousands of years maybe, and maybe we can't even teleport people. So they're all good questions, so I'll just say, excellent question, this is way, way, way off what any science is talking about, what we could do. But if we actually treated people as a physical system, then in principle you can write a wave function, or a quantum state for instance. You know, at least all the atoms make up perfect, so we can think about that. So if we apply sort of what's happening with photon to scale it up to people, as an example. So would the person feel it? Well, certainly any physical measurement has got to occur over a finite period of time, physically. Nothing happens instantly. And so if someone was, well, we don't actually know what measurements you'd make for a person, but certainly that would be, you know, very disruptive. You know, they'd be destroying your body.
Yeah.
And so as a result, I guess the person probably, they probably would have some feeling already.
If you wanted to go somewhere without actually moving, just rip a hole in space.
so much easier.
Okay, Ross, yep.
Back on the actual photon beam. So
right, yep.
What sort of information will get teleported so that that beam gets copied? Is it only the information?
It's kind of, in a sense, it's information about the state or the arrangement of the laser beam. So it's information really about its amplitude. So how intense it is, how intense the laser beam is. Also something a bit more subtle, what kind of, in a sense, sort of phase it is, the phase of the wave involved in it. So really, if you know the amplitude and the phase of a laser beam or any, which you can think of as like an electromagnetic wave, then you know enough to reconstruct. So you know how intense it is, but you also know kind of, in a sense, how it's kind of sort of wiggling, whether it's like a cos wave and it starts off from, you know, one and goes down and then back up, whether it's a sine wave where it starts with the phase and then goes sort of up and then down. So it's the amplitude and the phase.
So the teleport beam and beam A sort of connects, and beam B comes out as sort of connects to the two, and then with the measurements that you take, then you can take away a bit of beam B? Is that right?
So in a sense, you could think, one way of thinking about it is that the original teleportation sends across all the information, but it does so in some imperfect way, in some uncontrollable way. So 25% of the time, or at least some part of the time, it actually sends all the information you need, but then some other part of the time it sends it, but it's been a bit corrupted or it's a bit sort of distorted, and then you've got to basically send the extra information to kind of correct for this distortion. If that makes sense. So I might just take one more question. You had your hands. No question? Figure it out yourself. Great. Actually, then, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure what you precisely mean by teleportation. So,
right, yep.
So are you recreating the quantum state of the original?
Exactly.
Yep. Okay, so then,
I'll go through the math in a minute, but yeah, it's certainly great.
So say you do the teleportation and at the starting area, where you're, say you've got an atom that you're teleporting,
yep.
Do the teleportation. The original atom's waveform is going to be messed up. It's going to collapse, right?
Yes.
But then the one that you the result of teleportation, is it going to be in the same state as the atom after you teleported it or before?
The same state before. So
okay. So
you make the measurement and are not just disrupted and mess up and collapse the wave function of what you're teleporting. You actually get information about kind of the pre-measured state. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So we'll go through the math in a minute, but yeah. So definitely, what I should say, we're actually teleporting the quantum state. So maybe I might just go on for a bit. And so we make this adjustment. And so that's the trick of how quantum teleportation works. It seems a bit like magic, but the essence that we actually somehow exploit entanglement and the properties of that. Use that. People talk about that as the quantum channel for using the teleportation. So just as kind of comparison between Star Trek and sort of real life teleportation, maybe it seems to be instantaneous in Star Trek, but necessarily it takes a small amount of time. The object itself is teleported in Star Trek, or we only teleport the structure or the properties of an object in quantum teleportation, i.e. information. They can do it with people in Star Trek. Unfortunately, we just have photons and atoms at the moment. The original is destroyed in the process in Star Trek, and the original is destroyed in the process here. We can teleport to an uncharted planet in Star Trek. Unfortunately, we're just up to 600 meters, and we need to have something set up. We need to have photons or the raw materials for making up whatever you want to teleport at the destination. You can't just have nothing there and kind of teleport something down to there. So over 1,000 kilometers, we're just up to 600 meters at the moment. But, yes?
Does it seem that there's any limit to the distance that you can teleport some type of?
There's no fundamental limit. The main limit is really the entanglement's the limiting factor. So it's very, very fragile. So it's like you've got these two photons are entangled with each other. You've just got to be just really, really careful how you carry them and how you move them, because you've really got to stop them almost from interacting with pretty much the rest of the world. And this is very difficult to isolate almost completely isolated. And so that's the key factor. So in practice, you could do it, you know, to the furthest galaxy away, but in principle, yeah. But that's just an experimental detail. If the experimentalist just hasn't been able to do it. So, okay. So what might be teleporting in the future? Well, teleporting a grain of sand, well, maybe 100 years. So a grain of sand, that would involve, let me see, that would be, there'd be billions of molecules, billions of atoms in a grain of sand. A person, I mean, who knows, no one's even been talking about that. That's, even if you can, in principle. So that brings us to kind of the end point for teleportation. But what I'd like to say now is that, I mean, quantum teleportation is a reality, and all experiments, I mean, all new technology we have now, computers, the computers we're all using, we take for granted. At one point in time, they were just sort of prototypes, and there were just a handful of scientists that had them around the world that were making them, and they were computers the size of the entire room, and this was back in the 1950s. But eventually, they get smaller, more practical, faster, and the technologies flow through. So where we are today, and certainly a lot of people think like this in quantum information, we're just sort of at the stage where with these quantum teleporters, and quantum secret codes, and quantum computers, where people were in the 50s with conventional computers. And just think of a stage where there were just 5 or 10 computers in the entire world. And go back that, and think now, 55 years later, we have, think of how many millions or even millions or hundreds of millions of computers there are now. I mean, that gives you an idea for the potential for quantum technology and essentially for perhaps the quantum technology revolution. And so it seems likely already you can buy commercially quantum cryptographic systems, and we'll see how far people take teleportation. And so eventually one day, seems most probable, maybe 30, 40 years, people actually start thinking of uses for quantum teleportation. Maybe you'll be able to buy quantum teleportation systems. I mean, we don't know if this will pan out, because it's very hard to predict the future, and maybe there'll be some difficult things. But certainly, if things keep on going, there may not be any problems. So what I would actually like to pose you a challenge at the moment. And so one day, I mean, you may be the chief executive officer of Quantum Technology Incorporated. And you may be the chief scientist, the chief physicist, and the boss may come up one day and say, look, we've actually got to the stage where we can market, we can use quantum teleportation systems. They're working, they're fine, you know, it's 2020, you're peak of your career, and they may say, well, what are we actually going to use them for? Like, how can we market this? So what will people use? So what are some good ideas we could have for teleporting? And so what I'd like you to do, maybe get into groups of three and actually come up with a use, or how you would use, or how you would apply a teleportation. How would you? It's up to your imagination. If you want to. Would you teleport people to have holidays or whatever? Does that make sense? Okay, I'll give you 5 minutes.
Yes.
So I think it would be hilarious if a whale turned up at a basketball game.
Okay. So you'd like to use one of the most advanced technologies potentially teleport a whale for basketball.
And also bulk shipping.
So, and
bulk shipping. So things like oil and
Okay, so you don't serious.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just practice jokes on the weekend.
Yes, Ross.
Well, if you have a quantum computer where the information is expressed in the quantum states of atoms, then couldn't you quantum teleport those atoms and then reconstruct the quantum states of those? So you get a system of communication that has a ridiculous amount of bandwidth.
Except you need a system of communication with a ridiculous amount of bandwidth.
But certainly, if you get more information from the quantum states than you send,
certainly you could teleport any quantum state, and a quantum computer has a quantum state, so definitely you could teleport that. So you would, I mean, there's a lot of information there, but you would need a lot of entanglement to teleport that, but you definitely could do that. Okay, Daniel.
On a night shift, it's that your birthday or something, and you're obviously over 21 in the States, and you have a bottle of alcohol. And what happens if you drink over the limit? Can you teleport the alcohol with you, that is within you? Something that is inside.
Okay. I'll
get back to you when you're at one. You gotta know about us. So if you had something in your stomach you wanted to get rid of,
could you teleport it out?
Teleport yourself. You have to. That's a good point. So could you teleport everything but the contents of your stomach?
What do you need?
So in principle, it might. It might make you feel a bit icky, you know,
but it's not me. No, I'm in the right field. Because all you have to do is, like, whatever machine, this is assuming you can tell me where it's called, but, like, whatever machine that you can scan the quantum state sitting in your body, you can tell it to scan every molecule in your body sitting.
Right, yeah, except you do have natural amounts of ethanol in you.
Yeah. Okay, that's yes.
I was just going to say, I'm serious. I know we were joking about the alcohol thing.
Hey,
it's serious better medication. You can use it to treat a tumor or growth.
Okay, just teleport everything in your body.
Oh, you can teleport.
Yeah, yeah. They answer drugs directly to the tumor.
Okay. Yeah,
or of course, that high tech, we just have to buy nanobots.
Well, maybe, yeah. But the interesting thing, actually, what we would have to have is to actually teleport the drugs in there, we have to have the actual. Well, you have to actually have the raw materials that make up the drugs.
Well, we're assuming that the cancer cells are made up of the same, like, there's enough molecules in the body to make up the same.
Right.
So it actually eats the tumor and it makes anti-tumor anti-cancer drugs at the same time.
It's convenient.
So you have anti-cancer drugs made up of the same things that make up
but it can't
cancer. If you can do that.
Well, the drugs are still just carbon, oxygen, nitrogen.
Right.
Same elements that make up human flesh.
Okay.
Does it have to be the same atoms or does it just have to be a specific number of
atoms? Actually, yeah, just in principle, just a specific number of subatomic bits, a specific number of spots, forks, or whatever, but then you'd have to have some way of combining them in the right way, and energetically that could be.
Right. So, if you, like, you're sending a person as a radio wave, so the fact that you digitize, so if you, like, put that onto a computer and edit it,
I'm not sure that would be very difficult to do just because when you're actually teleporting information by quantum channel. The entanglement, what it seems to do is do it in a non-local way. Like that doesn't seem to sort of do it like the way you might send a JPEG file or something.
I mean, you've got the teleporter picking it up and then send the signal to a computer.
Right, so you can just resemble it in a different way. So potentially you could, in principle. Maybe you could do that. Okay, we might just finish up there. So that's all very interesting. Actually, this is, I'm really, really happy people come up with mainly positive use. So I've done this a few times. And I found with grade 11 students, 16 years old, generally they come up with stuff like saving the world, environmental things. But I've done this with actually first and second year university students, and it's always been, well, you could use it to commit a crime or something. I don't know what happens in between grade 11, but just
military reason.
Yeah, but just stay this way. Okay, so some of you have a paper here. And when scientists, when they want to spread their research and they come up with an idea and they write it up and spread it out to the scientific community, what they do is they write papers. We write research papers. And this is actually a research paper from a journal, one of the most well-known, famous, the top physics journals of the world. It's called Physical Review Letters. You've got a paper in here. You're doing very, very well. And this is actually the paper. You can see the date, March 29, 1993, and this is actually basically the paper that started quantum teleportation. So it's by six scientists, Charles Bennett, Charles Bassard, Claude Crepieu, Richard Joza, Ashley Perez, and William Wooters. And so these six scientists came up with it. It's kind of ironic, but the person actually came up with the idea and we did the most work, it's actually the person that has their name last, because it's alphabetical. So kind of William Wooters, Bill Wooters is the person that did the most work for this. But he's kind of last, and so it's done alphabetically. And this really shows, first of all, I mean, science is done in teams, so it's typically not sort of an individual person, so it's a team. And these people from all over the world. So Charles Bennett from the US, Charles Bassard, I think he's French-Canadian, Claude Crepieu from, I think, France, Richard Joza originally from Australia, Ash Perez is Israeli, and Bill Wooters from the US. So it was sort of done all over the world. And so, as you can see there in the paper, you can see the first line, an unknown quantum state phi. And so what we really do, whenever we represent things in quantum mechanics, we have states, or states for pairs. And so it represents that we have the state of an atom. We have an atom, we want to represent how it is. We do that via a state. And so what a state is, it's just a vector. So Fred was talking about vectors and vector spaces, so you'll know what a vector is. And so we might have just a vector space, we might have an x unit vector, y unit vector here, and to represent a quantum state, it might be just something like this. Here's some vector v, we'll call it. We'll use this. But typically, physicists, they like to be a bit different, and so there are a lot of different ways of representing a vector. Sometimes you have a v, or you could have, what is it, a little tilde down below. But quantum physicists, we like to be unique, so the way we represent something that's a vector, we just get kind of a vertical line here, and I guess a greater than sign, and represent a vector like that. And that's the technical name for that is a ket. And so basically, when you see this, it's exactly the same as this, or it's exactly the same as this. It's just a different notation. So it's just math. So it's a different notation. And so what we might have here is we've got this vector v. Let's just represent it by a v like this, which is called a ket. So again, it's a vector, slightly different notation. But we just, I don't know, they just like to use Greek letters in physics papers. Maybe it just sounds more fancy and more impressive. So we'll get rid of the v, and we'll call it a phi, as they have. And so what they tried to teleport was the quantum state. So what this does is it represents all the information we know. It's a representation of objects. So it's kind of weird that we have physically what they did in the experiment. They might have a photon, but you represent that mathematically by the state. And the two kind of basic states you might have, this is what they did in the experiment. Instead of being them x and y, two possibilities for photon, if we're looking at polarization, it could be horizontally polarized, so the electric field wiggling in a horizontal plane to that photon, or vertically polarized, the electric field wiggling in a vertical plane. So they're two, I guess, distinct possibilities. And so we have horizontal here, and again, we represent that by a vector. So we could use this symbol, but, well, let's just kind of be fancy and use this one here. And we have vertical. But theoretical physics is very slack, and it would take a lot of time and effort to write on writing vertical and horizontal all the time. So let's just abbreviate them to V and H. Is that all right? Okay, great. So we just have H for horizontal here and V for vertical. And so what we have is what they call it an unknown state. So that means we have a state. So we have tangibly configured as a photon and has some polarization, either horizontal or vertical, or it could even have some combination or some superposition. Because remember, this is quantum mechanics. And the electron doesn't have to go through one slit or another slit. It can go through both slits. So a photon doesn't have to have either vertical or horizontal polarization. It could have both or some combination of both. So, but any vector here in this, and I guess we can extend the vector space like here, any vector we write here, imagine we have a vector, we don't know what it is. The two basis states, well, they're V and H, so it's got to be some combination of those. So the most general state we have is, if you go over to the next page, I think what they have is, or they have something like equation 3, well, they have something like that. They actually have phi 1 equals A okay, let's just change that around like they actually have something like that, but they just have this extra subscript, and that doesn't really mean much. All that means is that that's just a label for particle, but it's just the first photon we're dealing with, or the first particle. So we can have that, we cannot, but just the one here, that just means it's the first particle. So we will, we'll leave that in for now, but, and they have up and down arrows because they're dealing with spin. So in a sense, it doesn't matter concretely what it is, but either you could deal this with teleporting a photon, and the two possibilities are horizontal and vertical, or you could teleport an electron. And you know electrons, I guess you saw yesterday, they talked about spin. Did they talk about spin? Yep. And what if doing one of two ways an electron can spin, either up or down, exactly. So if we have an electron spin, as Sarah Jane said, it could be up, or, yeah, that's right, or it could be down. And so we could be talking about teleporting instead of a photon, an electron and a spin. And so that's just why they have this up or down. So we could do it all in terms of photons, or we could do it all in terms of electron spin. And so basically, they're sort of, I guess, these two are equivalent. So that's all we're dealing with, and that's all the reason why they have this equation here. And so the reasons why they have these coefficients, A and B, imagine if you have, I guess, go over to another board. That's fine. We just go back to something which might look familiar. Do you use x and y unit vectors or I and j? X and y, okay. When I was in school, we used I and j. But thanks.
Close, though. Why would you use two letters that look similar?
I don't know, that's what the teacher told us, so. Okay. Okay, so x and y, so if we add any vector here, so sort of v, if you like, then we know that it's and you know it's in the space, it's got to be some combination of x and y. If you don't know what it is, you might say, well, it could be some coefficient of an x unit vector plus some component y unit vector like that. So these are a and b. So A and B are unknown. So if you know it's in terms of, look, I've got a vector somewhere in the space, I don't know what it is, don't know anything about it, and you know, well, it's got to be some combination of A and B. So A and B are there, they're unknown coefficients. And so these are exactly what we have here is exactly what they have here. That's why they have the A and B coefficients there. And they also have this other condition, you see, just below equation 3, they have does anyone remember what the little square vertical lines are? Yep, absolute value. Yep, excellent. So they're the absolute value signs there. And so just to go over, so what is an absolute value? So remember we had this thing called complex numbers, and we're talking about those. So we might have this idea of I square root of minus 1, and that leads to the idea of complex numbers, which are generalizations. What? Sorry? He doesn't like that?
Yeah, there's I square root. Someone said I equals the square root of negative 1, and so I squared equals negative 1, and he's like,
Does everyone's promise not to tell him?
Yes.
Okay. So we have this thing here. Okay. And so we have I equals so we're going to break one of Frederick's rules. So we have this here, but generally we can have where the complex number is A plus IB. And we want to find out the magnitude. So it's some complex number, so it could be 1 plus 2i, and we want to find the magnitude of that. And again, remember we can represent that in a complex plane by sort of the real numbers here and the imaginary numbers here. So that's sort of one unit along the real direction, one, two units up here. And so that's like a sort of vector or point up there. And if we want to find the magnitude of that direction or length, which is Pythagoras, it's just 1 squared plus 2 squared. Take the square root of all of that to give us the square root of 5. And so in that case, the magnitude or norm is that. And so generally, what we have is the norm or magnitude of a complex number is just a squared plus plus b squared. So,
excuse me. What,
yep.
So is that a real number that's for 5? Can we plug that into a graph that wasn't, you know, imaginary at all?
Yeah, that's always a real number. So yeah. And so I'll probably use pretty bad notation here because here A and B are real, but here they're complex. Mm-hmm. So that we can see in the So I really should use something like C and D in here. And so in general, A and B, they're complex numbers, so we're going to find magnitudes and the norms, and we want that equal to 1. So that's why they have that condition there. So,
David, it's square root there.
Sorry?
C squared plus D squared.
Oh, okay, yeah, thank you. Okay, so going back. So what we want to have is, so to teleport something, what we need is entanglement. And so they have this entangled state. And that's what they have in equation 1. So, and so what we've got, you can think of it as, well, maybe if we go with electrons, we have electron 1. And electron 2, and what we want, we're just looking at their spins of the electron. So this is electron spinning around some particular way, and the other one is spinning around some particular way. And if you get teleportation, what we need is this quantum resource, we need entanglement to get it going, to actually implement it. So we need some state of affairs for the spins that are entangled. So imagine if we just have this electron, and we'll call it just label 2, because we've already got using up the label 1 for the particle or the electron we want to teleport, and so we'll call this 2 and 3. So over here we have some sort of electron, and that's in some state 5 we don't know, and that's kind of particle 1, and that's particle 2, and that's particle 3, and that's the convention they use. So it's got 3 particles, which is label 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3. And so we want to just look at the state of these two electrons, and if we have their state as just this, I get the state of one of them being like this, and I guess we want to find the combined state, so we need this, remember this is the tensor product, we want the state of one electron and the state of the other one, we need kind of to really combine them somehow, we have this tensor product operation. So the state of the two electrons we have here are like this, then, well, that's just the state where the first electron is just spinning upwards, spinning one way, and the second electron is spinning the same way, spinning upwards. And that's actually not an entangled state. It's just one electron has a definite spin, the other one has a definite spin. There's no entanglement there, because when two electrons are entangled or two particles are entangled, they just don't have individually a definite state of affairs. So that actually won't kind of work. And so we actually need the state that's an entangled state, so where the particles, they actually don't have a definite state. And so that's why equation 1, they have so the most important bit, I guess, is this part here. I guess they have square one over the square root of two there, it doesn't really matter. But if you actually think about what that state is for electrons two and three, that's a superposition state. So electrons, that's kind of weird, the electrons don't have a definite state, but either it's the case that the first one's spinning up and the second one's spinning down, or the second one's spinning down and the first one's spinning up. So you can sort of just look at that combination. And that combination, somehow, this is a weird, spooky, entangled quantum state where we have these two possibilities, one up, one down, and then one down, one up, but they're somehow kind of superimposed or merged on each other, and they're both there at the same time. And it's kind of very, very hard to get a picture of that, but this is actually, as I said, an entangled state. So if you try and actually, well, the reason it is if you try and sort of separate it out and write it as a state, just in the form of the state of one of these particles and the state of the other one, there's no way to do that. There's kind of, in a sense, there's no way to just separate out the individual states to kind of sort of extract them from each other. And so what I mean is there's no way to write it. So that we have some state for the second particle, sort of, and some state for the third particle. There's no way that's just not equal to. So you've got to have to write them all sort of all in one, from one strange part. And so we'll see how far we get through. And so what we want to do is we have just all three particles we want to write. There's actually really four or five, just three or four steps to this. But what we want to do is write down the overall total state of the electrons. So we have A, what was it? So if I have this, so if we look at, okay, so if we look at equation four, really that's equivalent to rewriting equation four, which is like V down. So this is putting all the states of the particles together. And again, this is just vectors. So really we've got two dimensions for the first electron, two dimensions for the second, two dimensions for the third, and we actually have to multiply the dimensions together to get the overall state. So this is like just a vector. It seems sort of in an eight-dimensional space. It's kind of hard to visualize, but it's, again, it's just a vector. It's just like the vectors you've seen. And so we have, and this is exactly what they have in equation four, except what they do is they just they multiply some terms out. So because if you just have something like this, you can actually just, as you can use the normal rules of multiplication. So it's exactly like having two brackets where you've got two terms in each bracket. And if we had something like A plus 12 C plus D multiplied by E plus F. So you all know you can just expand to be C E plus C F plus D E plus D F. Just, you know, that's real. Where you can do exactly the same rule for multiplication you can use here, you can use with these vectors here. So you can multiply them out to get four terms. And if you actually count up the number of terms you get in equation four, with three vectors in them, there are four terms in there. Yep, two on the top line, two on the second line, and that's basically comes out by just getting this and just multiplying them out together. So that's all they've done. So I won't write it down. So if we just look at equation four, we get this here. And then what they do is, so we get to equation five. Uh, You actually, maybe I can pick this up. There's technology in this. So then we've just got these vectors, and so nothing is, it's just kind of, we're really changing the basis that we use. So I guess if we have two-dimensional vector, we have an x unit vector here, and a y unit vector, and we have some vector v here, we can represent v equals c x unit vector plus d y unit vector. We can represent it as some combination of these two unit vectors, but we didn't have to choose y, x and y. There's nothing special about that, and we could actually think of other two other vectors. One might be another unit vector here and a unit vector there, and this one might be x plus y unit vector divided by root 2, and this might be x minus y unit vector by 2. So really we're just changing the basis of the vectors. So we could, in a sense, we're kind of sort of tilting by 45 degrees the two basis vectors we have. And so we could call this vector call it sort of alpha, and this one beta here. So there's nothing, as I said, there's nothing special about the x and y directions. And so because of that, we can represent this vector v, any vector, as some, I guess, some other, well, I can use up small letters. I guess g comes after f. So we've got alpha plus, and then I guess h comes after g. Okay, so we have, I guess this is a v here. So again, this is just representing the same vector, this vector here, but instead of using x and y basis vectors, we use these sort of weird combinations. It's another coordinate system, if you like. And so this is what we do. And exactly what they do to get from equation 4 to equation 5 is just do that. We're jumping the camera. Great. So this will come on in a minute. And so okay. So we just, yeah. So this is kind of, this is the tricky bit. And it's actually really pretty simple, but it just takes a while, so I'll just turn the lights down a bit. But for what you...
No, it's okay.
You
have to change the light.
You
have
to change the light?
I think this one. It should be a button.
Should be, you know how to work this? Can everyone turn their heads to the side? Okay. I didn't do anything. Okay, so I'll come back to the top in a minute. And so again, we can change the basis vectors we use here. We can change the basis vectors we use in the other case. And so this is exactly what we're going to do. And this is actually the hardest bit on quantum teleportation. And once you can understand this, you can understand the rest of it. So okay, so now there's something to imagery. Could you do that for a teacher at home? Okay. So if we're happy with this, is everyone happy with that? Question 4. Okay. Is this, am I making any sense? Okay, good. So again, these are just vectors. We're using this weird notation, this sort of straight line, vertical line, and a greater than small, but it's just a notation. You can kind of just forget about, just imagine an arrow above or a tilde below. It's just a notation. And so what they actually used, and this is a paper that every physicist in quantum information was reading in 1993, where it came out, it was hot research. So it's just 12 years ago, it's not that long ago. And this is what people were reading. And so what they looked at is, I guess they got this equation here, equation 4, and they used the fact that, and maybe we'll just finish on this, we can just verify this fact here, you can convince yourself, let's just take the first term in that is, so I'll write down four equations, and if you can, we'll just finish with that, if you can just convince yourself that these are true. So what does that mean? And the second one? Okay, how about this one? And this one? And this one. And this one. Okay,
that's a screen for.
So all I do is you notice. While I'm writing down the next bit, if you can see if you can find all of those four things that I've seen in equation 4, you can actually just, maybe in your paper, just circle where you can find those four things I've written down there in equation 4. And all they do is know that...
They're all there.
Subtract these, cancel out, you get 2 of those, divide by 2, you get that. Make 2 terms in the same. Does that make sense? Okay. And then just 2 more equations. And these are
Thank you.
Sorry? No, you don't. Sorry? I guess I'm changing. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, and the next one is probably particular what that will be, if that's... So what you do is take is you've got four circles in. You should have four circles in equation four. Does everyone have the four terms of that circle, these terms here? Well, you've all agreed that these are equal to these. So you just take all the four terms you've got circled in equation four, you substitute the first one, this, the second one, this, the third one, this, and the fourth one back. And it gets very long, it gets very messy. And but that's exactly what they've done in equation five that they've done for you. Basically, but the only thing is they I guess have a convention I haven't told you about, so I'll just write that down and then we'll take a break. But this is sort of the hardest thing in quantum teleportation. So if you can understand this, there's all downhill from here. So I'll just write down these four terms. So exactly what the setup told you about, that's exactly what they've done. It's exactly what the physicists did in 1993. These very, very smart people. But all they have is, so you know, theoretical physicists are lazy, and so they didn't want to write out 0, 0, 1, 1, or up, down, up, down, and so they used a little symbol or convention for them. And so what they did was up, up, plus, down, down. What that is equal to, they called that just the Greek letter phi. And we've got that should be like a 2 and a 3. So what do I have?
1, 2,
so that's right. 1, 2, and so what did they just said that was equal to
5, 1, 2.
Yep, great, exactly. And they put a little plus there. The plus there, because you've got a plus sign here. And for minus, and exactly, we've got a minus and by 1, 2. And you can probably see what these other ones are going to be. Capital Greek letter psi, and we've got a plus sign, so we have a plus sign there, and there's a minus one, and a minus sign. So again, this is exactly what they did. And so just to leave it there is my claim is if you've got all the four circles you've got, you just replace, as I said, make these replacements, you get a whole long, complicated thing, and then you're good theoretical physicists, so you want to make it simpler, and you just find out wherever you've got these four things. These four terms here, just replace them by these simpler symbols, and then you actually get exactly what they have there. And the fact that the R's come out, and that's exactly what you've got. And that's the hardest math mathematics. It's just about, it takes about only 4 or 5 lines, but it's just a bit long. So you could do it, I mean, you guys could do it, you know, about 10, 15 minutes, but that's exactly what I'm saying. So what we will do is we'll start again from there. So it's lunchtime now, but essentially just what I'm going to go through is probably things that I'll, but really relate these symbols back to physically, because every single step that I talked about before can actually relate it back to the physics and to actually what they're doing in terms of the laser beam. So with that, it's lunchtime.